Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome. Today, we are speaking with Oliver Kotelnikov and Sean Dowling from IBA. They are hospitality transaction division brokers, and IBA is the Pacific Northwest's oldest full-service business brokerage, and they have seven offices that cover Washington and Oregon. Today, we are recording this. It'll be up online this afternoon on our website, wahospitality.org, and we will send it to you in your inbox. So, just so you know, keep an eye out for that. If you have any questions today, go ahead and type them into the Q&A button on your Zoom screen. It's down at the bottom, and you can type it in and we can answer those live on air. And finally, next week, we have a Crisis Communications 101 webinar with Aaron Blank from the Fury Group. And the Fury Group is a member of our advisory network. And if you are ever in need of one of our advisors, you can give one of your TMs a call and they can put you in touch. You are entitled to a 30-minute consultation with any of them. And so you can register for that it's next week at 10 a.m. With that, I'm going to hand this off to Ken Wells, our Senior Director of Business Development. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning. Hi, everyone. I appreciate you guys being here. And as usual, this is our annual webinar that we do with Oliver over at IBA. He's got Sean joining him this year. Always excited to do this particular webinar because it really talks about what kind of type of trans or the transactions of buying and selling and what's going on in the marketplace in our industry for 2024, but also start to look at 2025. So it gives us an opportunity to see what's going on in transactions and transitions, I guess you could say, with some of our operators. So with that, I welcome Oliver. Say hello. I always he, Oliver's been a great supporter of our members and has been in this space for with us for a half a dozen years now. We always appreciate having Oliver and his expertise. And then joining his team this last year has been Sean Dowling, or maybe the last couple of years, Sean. I don't know how long, but welcome aboard. Glad to have you. What's neat about these two gentlemen, and they come with hospitality experience. So if you have ever had the opportunity to purchase a business or sell a business, you didn't open it up from scratch. Guys like this are good to have on your team and help you help you to stop you from making a lot of mistakes. So these are really good guys. They know the industry very well.
Thank you, Ken. Good morning, everyone.
Yep. Thanks, Ken. Appreciate it.
First question is, and I like to always start off with, where we're at and what's the last year been like. But Sean, if you don't mind, what has been the general level of transactions activity for 2024 in the hospitality space?
Sure. So I'm going to use two different data sets as a reference point and to give us an overall picture of what the trends are like. The first is BizBuySell. I'm sure most of the people on the call are familiar with BizBuySell. It's a industry business listing site where sellers can list their businesses and potential buyers can go and find the sort of business that they're looking for. They BizBuySell released a Q3 report on transactions, and the news is positive. So the transactions in Q3 year over year since 2023 were up overall about 5%. That represented 2,399 businesses sold during the quarter. The largest industry or sector was services at 39% of those transactions, and the second largest was restaurants at 21%. And so even though restaurants was only the second largest industry of transactions, that also represented a 15% year-over-year increase from the previous year. So it's clear that restaurant sales are definitely picking up in 2024 from that data. The second data set that I dove into was the SBA lending institution, right? So a lot of people are probably also familiar with the SBA. They published some very good data online. You just go on Google SBA lending statistics, it's readily available. So their fiscal year runs October 1st through September 30th. And so their fiscal year for 2024 just ended a couple months ago. When you compare the data from 2024 to 2023, it is clear that business transactions are increasing overall. And specifically in the restaurant industry, in 2023, there were 7,524 loans in accommodations and food service, which accounted for 13.1% of all the transactions. And in 2024, that number for the same sector was 8,402, which shows almost a 12% increase year over year. So it looks by any metric that we're looking at, the overall number of transactions and the trajectory of the restaurant industry is headed in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you, Sean. No, I would definitely agree with those summary numbers, and obviously we look at a lot of data and analytics. I would say to supplement that, you know, the one factor that we have a pulse on as brokers, and that may not necessarily be reflected in the numbers in the public domain, is consumer confidence. So we're talking to buyers and sellers, we're talking to lenders, you know, and a lot of it is, what's the headspace? You know, how are people feeling about the economy? How are people feeling about the restaurant industry? You know, and a lot of it does have to do with lending. Certainly the interest rates declining are a helpful indicator, and the cost of capital coming down, you know, in the buyer's minds, that makes a purchase more affordable. Buyers and sellers are certainly more optimistic, with specifically, I would say one factor is that we're leaving the COVID numbers and the COVID narrative in the rear view. I'd say, you know, this is probably the last year where that dialogue's in the picture if we're looking at historical financials and documents and records. You know, so many have pivoted, many businesses have grown and sort of grown back stronger in the broken places, right? And our anybody that survived COVID is in a good position and is likely recovered and looking strong for 2025. Oh,
Ken, you think you're on mute.
Yeah, Ken, I think we got you on mute.
Appreciate that letting me know. So what type of prospects have you guys found that you're mainly representing over 2024?
Sure, I'll take this one first again. So I've had 7 listings over the course of 2024. 4 of those have been in the hospitality industry. One is we had a coffee shop that we wound up taking off the market for other reasons. I've got a brewery, a full service restaurant, and a tavern. Those are the projects that I have listed this year. In addition to that, I've also am in discussions with a number of other organizations in the hospitality industry, including a kind of a neighborhood bar in the Ballard area, a multi-location pizza franchise, a grocery store and deli. I'm not, you know, so it's a deli and grocery store combined. So I'll, you know, give that, consider that part of the hospitality industry. I've got about 3 other breweries that I'm talking to, and multiple coffee roasters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would follow that up with, you know, hospitality is circular, right? We've got restaurants, hotels, entertainment, travel, et cetera. If we narrow it down to the food and beverage sector, I think we've seen possibly the widest range of different types of concepts represented this year. Sean's mentioned some good ones and some variety there. I have a bakery / food manufacturing business with real estate included under representation. I've got a iconic bar and grill also with property. We've seen a number of different types of business owners reach out and really to do, you know, some version of what we're doing here is to understand, you know, what's the climate like? Is it a good time to go to market? What's our business worth? Can we get it evaluated? And we're having, you know, different types of conversations with a variety of buyers, because rather sellers, because the types of buyers out there are there are different kinds of buyers, right? For every type of listing, we're trying to find the right fit. So I would say, in terms of the range of conversations that we've had and the interest level, both on the buy and sell side, has been very positive. So we're seeing good indicators.
Excellent. So a little bit in different categories. Oliver, has there been anything in the lodging side that you guys have seen as far as, hotels and et cetera? Can you hear a little bit on what's going on in the lodging side?
Yeah, so have seen lodging, so mixed use, right? So lodging, hotel with grocery store, possibly with short-term rentals, with gas stations, right? So those types of mixed use properties that have come across our desk. We haven't listed one, or I don't believe IBA is one under representation, but we're certainly talking to those operators. It depends on the size and scope of the project. So, IBA represents that middle market space, so somewhere between $1 million and 30 million in transactional value. So if once you get into the hotel side and large real estate holdings, those become bigger projects. But we're certainly happy to look at that as part of our hospitality portfolio.
Do you see a lean towards franchises or independents that are generally buying and selling right now?
So we, Sean and I specifically, are mostly on the family-owned business and independent and privately held company size. We do have a franchise division at IBA with a couple of professionals working closely in that sector. Where we tie in closely is sometimes it's the buyers shift from one concept to another. So somebody thinking that they maybe are buying their first business in the hospitality space and they want to own a family business, they realize that maybe that isn't the best starter place to start, right? There isn't the infrastructure and the support for less experienced operators, so they transition onto the franchise side, where there's more support infrastructure and where they can kind of dip their toes, and then those are they may stay on the franchise side, or they may then later expand into a privately owned or family owned business. But they there's a kind of a line there where one's a better fit for a specific type of buyer than the other.
Yeah, one of the other Ken, if I may, one of the other real advantages to the franchise model is, if you're evaluating between an existing business and a new franchise, you can put a new franchise almost anywhere, right? So if you are geographically more concerned about where your business is going to be, it may be easier to start a new franchise than to find an existing business that kind of fits the mold of what you're looking for. Two of the businesses that I've either been in discussion with or have listed this year have been franchises. It does add a bit of a wrinkle in the sales process when you're selling an existing franchise, mostly because the franchisor has the first right of refusal if they want to buy it back. So there's a little bit more risk on the buyer side. I would just add that.
And they also have to approve the franchisee coming in,
They do.
correct? Right. And I know some of that. Yeah. So that's great. What are some of the emerging trends to be aware of for the restaurant buyers and sellers on that side, the independents, or I guess independents or franchises, either way?
Yeah, there's a lot of trends right now. So I think one of the interesting trends, if you look at it, and so we've already touched on interest rates and how that's impacted the number and the value of transactions and people's risk tolerance and ability to, to debt service a transaction. One thing that the higher interest rates has led to is an increase in seller financing. If you look through the Q3 report from BizBuySell, the percentage of sellers willing to consider seller financing has increased. The percentage of sellers who are completely against seller financing has decreased. And more of the transactions actually include seller financing. That's one of the, for me, the interesting things. I think it's more along the lines of, you know, if the new normal is this, is the interest rates we're seeing, I think people would rather finance themselves as a seller than, you know, have a bank finance it at 8 or 9 or 10% or whatever it is. So that's one of the real interesting things that I've seen. Oliver, I'll let you add into that, and if you want to go back and forth on this one.
So in regard to trends, I would say one of the things to keep an eye on, and something that the buyers are closely looking at for businesses in the hospitality space, and conversely, what sellers should be aware of, is the prime costs. So this isn't necessarily news to anybody, but cost of labor and cost of goods. You know, cost of occupancy and rent being the third factor there. But I will say, you know, cost of labor can be difficult to control because that's legislatively mandated, and certainly, you know, the labor shortages. The restaurants need to be well staffed, but on the cost of goods side, I would say price increases for restaurants have absolutely become mandatory. We've seen some, you know, pushback from the owners on that due to concerns over, you know, pushback from the customers, obviously. But just understanding that that could be a difficult decision, but needs to be made, because if it's not made, then it's going to come out of the owner's bottom line. You know, where we're as brokers, we know that that impacts the value of the business at the time of sale. So, you know, we always make that recommendation if we're looking at, you know, historical financial trends, and we see that cost of goods just sailing off into the sunset. You know, we often have that conversation and say, you know, you probably can't control much what your purchase costs, but you can control you know, raising your prices, and sometimes that needs to be done. Especially, I would say now is key. Now is a key time, just because you may be operating at the same volume with the bottom line eroding if you're not watching those.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, in doing this job, we get to see the, you know, the underneath the kimono for a lot of businesses. And I definitely think one of the trends you're seeing right now is that the hospitality industry has acutely felt the impact of inflation. Just like Oliver's saying, not just labor and cost of goods sold, but you know, things like utilities have gone up quite a bit. Credit card transaction fees. You know, there's a the sector in general has felt the impact of inflation in the last year or two.
Yeah, it seems like everybody's taken advantage of the fact that inflation is taking place. You have some that aren't moving the needle, right, and it's hurting their business, and others that are affecting our business and it's costing too much.
No,
when you think of, go ahead, Oliver.
Oh, I just wanted to just kind of quick on that same topic, is I think it's helpful for owners to know, just, you know, you may take kind of a philosophical view on hospitality and the service that you're providing and what you're doing for the community. It's a privilege, you know, for customers to be able to go and dine out and be welcomed at your establishment. And it takes, you know, it takes capital and expense, and it's expensive to keep that running. So I think the shift needs to occur on the customer side, right? So that the owners cannot be asked to continue absorbing these costs because they need to be compensated for their efforts, right? For operating these businesses and what they've built, and for the service and the quality that they're providing. So having it that those conversations from that standpoint, and understanding that it's not easy being here, being open, providing, you know, a quality customer experience. Costs are going up. If you, as our customer base, would like to continue, you know, coming in and getting the service and quality that you're accustomed to, it's costing more. Realize it's costing us more. It can't all come out of, at our expense. So just thinking of it that way, and that it's a privilege that to be able to go out and visit your establishments. So
So in the hospitality sector, whether it's restaurant, lodging, et cetera, and you think of them being aware of emerging trends, right? Is there a specific emerging trend that you would say is different from a buyer and seller in that you could speak on or talk about, that difference of, your position in buyer and seller? Oliver, could you touch on that a little bit?
So how buyer and seller is
Seeing it differently, right?
seeing it differently. Yeah, well, a buyer is going to look at it, largely as an investment and a financial decision, right? They're coming in, they're, you know, they we're assuming they have some choices in how to allocate their capital. They're looking at a variety of different investments, even if it's a, different restaurants, right? So
So
there.
thinking of that, and I'm sorry for interrupting you, but in the aspect of being a buyer, do you see them trending and buying because of interest rates being higher? That are they buying lesser, is there a change in the what they're buying and how they're buying?
Yeah, so I mean, in that sense, I would say it's cost of capital and how far can their dollar go, right? So if it's the higher the debt service, the less product they can afford, right? So if the interest rates go down, we can possibly see a shift, buyers upgrading the price of the business that they're looking at. So if they were previously looking at a business priced between $1 million and $2 million, with the interest rate, taken down a full percentage point, they may be bumping up their search criteria to 3 million because their cost of capital and their down payment that they're allocating towards that purchase now buys more. That's the direct correlation. For the seller, I would say to them, on balance, and this is back to the prime costs, the business feels the same, right? It feels like it's the same amount of sales, same amount of customers coming in, maybe it's the same team, but they're not seeing or acutely feeling the bottom line eroding on the count of, maybe labor going up, maybe cost of goods going up until they see their financials at the end of the year. And they say, gosh, we made the same amount of money. We brought in 3 million, but we're only now keeping, let's say 300,000 of it versus 500,000 of it. So I would say, the sellers need to, in terms of trends, they need to shift and look at their financials more closely versus going by feel, right? So it can be natural to go by feel, having run something for 30 years or maybe 2, 3 decades, right? You have a good sense, but look at the numbers, because at the end of the day, it's numbers and figures that sell businesses, and not necessarily, pictures and
Yeah.
motions, et cetera. So
Sean, do you see something on the seller side that you would say is similar that you would point out as a trend or something to be aware of if I'm a buyer?
Not really. I think that the same factors that have always been at play for our buyer as a buyer looking at to a you know looking at a seller are going to be the same. Like, why is the person selling?
It shifts, right? It's just small shifts at that point.
Right. Why? But like, interest rates. I don't think interest rates are making a huge difference in why people are buying and selling their businesses at this point, or the restaurants, right? In the large cap merger and acquisition market, the cost of capital plays a larger role than in a transaction for a restaurant for 300 or 500,000. The average transaction in Q3 was 300 and or the median, I would say, that was $370,000 or $325,000, actually. So when you're dealing with when deals are that of that magnitude, the cost of capital actually becomes less of a concern. So the rule of thumb when you're a buyer is if you find the right product, don't let interest rates stand in your way. right?
Fair enough. Yeah, it sounds like
Well,
it's small adjustments.
it's about finding a good product
Right.
that you can take over, and an owner who's looking to exit for the right reasons, rather than just trying to make a buck. They're exiting because they're retiring, or they're exiting because they're moving, or they're exiting because some other reason, rather than just trying to, I'm going to sell because someone told me I can get X amount for the business.
Okay. Let's talk about some of the folks today might be looking at potentially preparing to start to sell their business. What is the actionable guidance you would give if someone is looking at putting their business up for sale over the next 8 to or 12 to 18 months?
Sure. I'll go first on this one. There's a few things. So, preparing, for an exit is much like just optimizing your business in general, right? People buy businesses because they're successful and they're a good product. So, what I would say is, and it's very much like once you do go through the process and list your business, the guidance we give people is very similar. You can't take your foot off the gas. You have to continue to operate your business and run it like normal. So that is do everything you can to increase sales, right? Manage your costs actively. Every dollar you save is an extra $2 to $3 in valuation, right? So if it's analyzing your vendors and your labor and your anywhere you're spending money, I would recommend that. If in a reality in this world is that a lot of us don't have the cleanest books. So now is probably a good time to have someone, if you need to, go back and start looking at your books and clean those up if you need to. And then the other thing I would say is it's a team sale. So you're going to need a broker involved at some point. Probably, right? You're going to need an accountant. You're going to need an attorney. You're going to need a wealth advisor. The sooner you can kind of start to get your team rounded out, the better.
Okay.
Oliver, what?
I have a couple questions, and these always come up every year, and I love these questions. And they put you guys on the spot. And I know there I know the, this is a variable type of answer, but what are the targets for labor, cost of goods sold, and fixed overhead? What do you see as those targets today? Labor, cost of goods.
So labor, we can split those up. So depends on concept. I'll just tell you that the cost of goods in a bakery or a pizza restaurant is going to be lower than that of a steakhouse, right? Just because of the materials and what we're using. I'd say you want to keep those between 25 and 35%, depending on your concept. Labor is going to depend large will be dictated largely by geography and obviously minimum wage laws. But I mean, we've seen those from 25 to 40%. You get into the 40% and the high 30s and things start to become cost prohibitive. It's when that you see large top line revenue, but very little or less falling to the bottom line, which can be, a deterrent for a buyer. So we don't want to churn product. We don't want to employ, 100 people and run the risk of just running a business and not keeping enough for our efforts. There has to be a risk reward. So I would say keeping those numbers somewhere in the 30s, low 30s is preferred. The other fixed cost would be occupancy. We haven't seen too terrible an increase in rents, but rent should be in mid single digits. So 4 or 5% is good. 6, 7, 8 is manageable. Again, you get into the double digits and it starts cutting into profitability. So.
What are you seeing as far as EBITDA at this point, Oliver? I know that's a again one of those variable questions, and it gets asked every year. But what's the last year been like, and what do you guys see moving forward?
So for hospitality, retail hospitality businesses between two and four, I would say is a multiple. It's directly correlated to risk. So a diversified business model, say something that's multi-location, or different, sources of revenue. So let's say you're doing dine-in, takeout, drive-through. You're catering. Maybe you have other sources, delivery. Whenever we can diversify that risk, the multiple goes up. So, single location, retail, dining room oriented concept, probably two to three, something that's maybe quick service, two, three, four, five locations, two to four, maybe five, depends. So,
Okay.
but I'd say.
Was the question on the multiplier of EBITDA or EBITDA as a percentage of sales?
It's the multiplier.
Multiple. We're talking multiple, Sean. Yeah.
That's kind of standard of
Yeah.
a lot of the our members ask.
And
It's pretty common.
I would also keep an eye on, I think this is where maybe Sean's comment was going, is it's just the profitability. How much of every dollar are you keeping? Right.
Right.
So if you're making, $1 million top line, but keeping 100,000, that's a 10% rate of return, right? We're on the lower side. It's hard to incentivize someone to enter a business, right? To own a business for that. If we're getting into the 15, 20%, that starts to generate a rate of return that's attractive to investors, and the risk becomes, worth the reward. So, but Sean, go ahead and I mean, what were you going to say about the other side of EBITDA?
Oh, I would just, I mean, I think it's because the previous question was, cost as a percentage of revenue. And I thought when you just said moved into EBITDA, and I was wondering if, I mean, the EBITDA as a percentage of revenue, I've seen all over the place. I've seen it be negative, right? And, when businesses come to us because their EBITDA is negative and their cash flow is, and they're not profitable, and they're like, yeah, maybe it's time to sell because we're not profitable. That's tough. That is not the right time to sell your business is when, things have taken a turn and your EBITDA is negative. So, but I've seen it up to, I've also seen EBITDAs, depending on the sector, and it can w vary widely, but of up to 20, 25%, where they're,
So that 20 to 25% correlates to the rate of, so that means a 4 to 5x, right? So,
Which would be like a multi-unit, high profile brand.
something like that, or something with longevity, right? A 4 to 5 decade concept that's again correlated to risk, that has shown proven rates of return and has the documents and records to substantiate it. But and then this dovetails to the question of what do we do to prepare? Get the business evaluated, right? I mean, short roadmap, finish 2024 strong, round out end of year reporting, file the tax return, and get the business evaluated. I think where we see a lot of challenges and maybe mismatched expectations is when there's an opinion of value with ownership that's tightly held, that is maybe based on incomplete or inaccurate information, or something that they've heard, something that's been suggested. We really won't know until we look at the documents and records and supplement it with market knowledge and experience based on current data, right? So that's really what adds up to a complete evaluation, and that can take a little bit of time, right? Like Sean said, gathering documents and records, having up-to-date financials, talking to brokers, interviewing brokers, seeing who you want to work with, getting an evaluation done, maybe getting more than one evaluation done, exploring your representation options. I mean, we understand that business owners, this isn't their full-time occupation, right? They have a business to run. That's why allocating more time towards, front loading some of the effort needed to complete that process and understand where you stand in terms of value, is very important. So it's just, you can mitigate it with time, start now, and then a few months down the road, you'll have a clear picture of what your exit ramp looks like.
You have a member question, and then from there, I'd like to ask a final question and take a couple of minutes on what next year looks like. But the member question is, how long of a lease is desirable when selling or buying?
Well, it really depends. There are benefits and drawbacks to having leases in place that are from both the long side and the short side. If you have no lease in place, so let me start off with that. If you have no lease in place, there are some benefits to that because you can walk away. You don't have to reassign a lease. You don't necessarily have a lease that may be reassigned, but you have to stay on, right, with a personal guarantee. Some landlords are going to want that, right? And so having no lease can be a good thing, right? There's a new concept in the business and real estate world called lease liability. So that the longer lease you have in place that has a personal guarantee, like you, that's something that you need to carry as a liability on your balance sheet because you're going to have to pay that no matter what, right? On the flip side, with no lease and no, there may be nothing of value to actually sell if you can't guarantee that the buyer is going to have access to the space that you're already in. So it can be a bit of a dance to do it. Like if you have a 5-year lease, right, that's good because it essentially is guaranteeing you a space for 5 years.
Sean, what would a bank want?
A bank, and then if a, okay, thank you. And if a bank is involved, there's going to be institutional lending. For example, if there's an SBA loan, they're going to require a lease that has written extension options through the term of the lease.
Well, the term of the loan,
Sorry, through the term of the loan, right?
which is what?
Usually 10 years.
SBA. So 10 years, right? So we're talking, either a straight 10-year lease or 5 plus 5 is what the bank is going to want and what most buyers are going to want at the start of the acquisition. They're investing significant capital, lease security for 10 years, whether it's two options or straight 10. That's a good rule of thumb. A bank is going to want the lease to match the term of their loan because that's obviously, a guarantee of an important piece of success is having the
So
lease.
it's all evolved around paying back your loan and from us.
Because the bank's underwriting it, so from their standpoint, but if from the buy side, they're investing a significant amount of capital. Odds are this is a long-term play, so 10 years in that space is what they're going to look for. I'm wondering, did we answer the question?
I believe you have. I would only add to that that if you don't have a loan, but yet you've got an out-of-pocket investment, you've obviously got to calculate the return on that investment. So that lease could be 5 or 10 years based on that. But then as an owner, you might, this is, I think, common as well, might want to meet with that landlord if you don't have a loan to see what whatever the, I guess,
And that's something we facilitate as brokers, lease reassignment and meeting with the landlord. But I would say in a retail setting, retail business model, right? Location, location, location. If you don't have security in said location, it's going to give buyers heartburn.
So it's going to sound like it's going to be closer to 10 years, but no, nothing probably less than 7, and it's probably closer to 10.
Somewhere in there.
Well, based on your loan.
It's a five plus type of
Yeah,
scenario.
a lot of it is going to depend on the landlord, to be honest, and how the landlord wants to handle things. Some landlords are going to want to reassign the lease and have you stay on. Some landlords are going to want to rescind the existing lease and novate a new one. So a lot of it depends on how the
Agree.
relationship with your landlord and negotiating that transition. So.
I think that's actually part of the process, right, of dealing with a quality group like yourself is making sure that that's all in order. I do have another member question here and running a little long, so I want to have some time for this, the final question. But member question is, what are standard fee ranges for an evaluation?
Don, go ahead.
For well, at IBA, we don't charge for evaluations. We do them as The first step in any relationship with a new client is we do an evaluation at no fee. And I'll explain why we do that. So there are some firms out there that do them. There are some business brokers firms that do charge either a fee for the evaluation, or they'll charge a retainer up front. There are also some other firms out there with fancy three-letter acronyms after their names that will charge a fee just to do a business evaluation, but then they'll just hand that off to you and let you do with it what you want. The reason why IBA doesn't charge for an evaluation is there's benefits on both sides. So for you as the business owner, you get to evaluate our expertise through the process of evaluation. You get to see if we're someone that, you know, because each of our brokers, when they do the evaluation personally, so you get to see if this is someone that you want to work with. And you get a third-party evaluation at no charge. And then the benefit to IBA is we get to see if you're someone that we think we can work with, because it could take 6 to 9 months to sell a business. We get to see if we believe in your business model, and we can see how realistic you are on the value of your business. So if all those boxes are checked, and we, when we walk through the evaluation we do, and we decide you want to go to market, then we'll go to market. So.
And there are no administrative or listing fees or evaluation fees. There are no fees of any sorts with IBA. We believe in a performance-based compensation model. All fees to IBA are due out of closing upon the successful completion of sale. Only happy customers pay us, Ken.
Yeah.
I touched on one thing that I would like to just to probably go back and touch and reiterate. Three of my listings this year were in the hospitality that we have actually under escrow right now, that we're in the hospitality area. I mentioned it can take 6 to 9 months. We had a lot of interest in the listings that were in the hospitality sector very quickly when we listed the businesses. And so they all went under contract very, very quickly. So in the, you know, if you're selling a good product, and it's priced right in the market, then you should probably expect that timeline to be a little bit accelerated.
Okay, some more questions here. All right, so brokers talk about profits, cost of goods. You know, what I'll call it, you know, franchise kind of corporate talk, but old school evaluation. So percentage of sales. I'm getting to the question here. I think percentage of sales, assuming reasonable profitability. Goal of long-term small businesses, peeling all benefits without taxation, 25%, 50%. This old school thinking is still out there. So I that's the question. I guess, is there a new model that people are looking at as far as in purchasing a business or in selling a business? Is there any type of model out there, or is it still the same model?
Well, the model, you know, at the foundation of it isn't so much restaurants or hospitality. It's return on investment, and it's sound financial principles that underlie, you know, any evaluation of any investment, right? Is what's the risk and what's the rate of return, and what else is out there, and is this competitive, and how safe is it? So I don't, you know, if I'm understanding the question correctly, I don't think that those are going away as concepts, and whether people are buying a restaurant or market securities, it's all on that spectrum, and they're going to look at it, you know, in through that lens. Are there new types of models and new types of buyers? Yes, absolutely. You know, we have employee buyouts, we have performance-based compensation, so like earnouts. You know, we have seller financing. We have a variety of different ways to put deals together. Is there something fundamentally new, you know, in how people view financial investment? I would say no. But yeah.
Well, the big differences are those that I would think are taking existing business and saying, okay, their numbers aren't, but we would run it, operate it, make some changes. So we might have a 25%. You know, we could take top sales. We know historically we produce 25% or et cetera out there.
I mean, they can look at it that way, you know, and they do, but I think where we run into trouble is trying to price that in up front and saying, hey, this business is worth this because it can do X. And we truthfully don't know if it can do X. If it can do X, then the restaurant operator or the business owner, would be advised to stay in place and stay at the helm and, bring that to life, and then they'll get paid for it.
Well, I'm not sure if I did justice to that question. So, to
Yeah, I apologize too if
the
I didn't.
anonymous attendee that put that in, if as we send out information, as we follow up with an email, if you need additional information or you'd like to reach out to Oliver or Sean and ask that question directly, feel free to. I mean, that's what they're here for. A couple more quick questions. Are ghost kitchens still popular post-COVID?
I would say short answer, no. I don't know, Sean, what's your
No,
experience?
that's good. That's good. Sean, unless you got a different one.
Nope.
Okay. And then what's a typical broker fee?
10% of anything under $1 million.
Okay.
And then it goes on, there's a sliding scale. If we do an evaluation and it comes back above $1 million, we would negotiate a commission rate at the time of walking through the evaluation.
Okay.
It depends on whether real estate's involved, but yeah, $1 million enterprise value, right? So sale value, between zero, around $1 million in final sale value. If we're at 2 million, 3 million, that's going to come down on the sliding scale. We reserve that until opinion until after we complete the evaluation, so that we can determine the size and scope of the project, and then quote the evaluation, quote the fee at the time of going over the opinion of value, so that the business owner can have all the numbers in the same place at the same
Okay.
time.
Could you each give just a couple of lines on what the market looks like for 2025, what you'd anticipate?
Yeah, I mean, I think it looks great. I think there's a lot of groundswell around, people because of the interest rates being high. I think scared a lot of people away from even thinking about a transaction. And I think that is, that's starting to reverse and people are like, okay, maybe it's time. And to be honest, that's the right thing, right? This is kind of the new normal right now. If it's time for you to exit your business, don't let, interest rates be a factor. And there may be some people who would put it off that came back. The other thing I have noticed this year is I think there's a diversification, excuse me, of the buyer profile. I think you're seeing, in a lot of the listings I had, there's a lot of people whose eyes are opening to the idea of business ownership, who are in the tech world, in getting out of the tech world, who are working in the hospitality industry. I think there's a lot more people who are figuring out that business ownership, specifically in the hospitality industry, is actually fairly accessible. But I think you need to, as a business owner, if you're looking to sell, think about what is it, what's the ideal profile like for someone to come in and buy this with an open mind, right? So it could be someone already in the industry, it could be another restaurant owner, it could be an employee, it could be a group of people who all work in the tech industry and have pooled some resources together to make a purchase. There's a lot of options out there about what a purchaser looks like.
Hey, Oliver, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I 100% agree. Great points. I mean, be open. We never know, even as experienced brokers, who the buyer will be. Sometimes an operator can get attached to an idea of who the next owner should be and who should take over their business and be the successor and build on their legacy, which is an understandable concern and a good question. But be open-minded. I mean, we're seeing the buyer, the business buyer pool get younger and younger, right? So we're seeing the younger generation re-embrace entrepreneurship, which in some way can come back as kind of a warm and fuzzy feeling to a re, you know a retiring business owner, because in some cases their kids, they're selling because their kids didn't want it, right? So they're seeing the younger generation, perhaps not their kids, but still the younger generation take it over. And there's a lot of variance, and some of them do want to work corporately, and others have tried it or haven't even dipped their toes and say, I want to own a business, right? And we're talking to capable buyers, between 25 and 30 sometimes, right? And they understand how the industry works, and they want to learn, and then just being open-minded. And but overall, the marketplace is robust. I think 2025 will be a strong year in terms of just general transaction activity. Obviously, you need buy sell, you need both. So I think both sides are optimistic.
I want to thank you both. I just tell everybody out there, I mean, you guys do evaluations. You obviously, you don't charge for that. But at the same time, I think you set up a future for people to what to think about over the next 12 to 18 months. So in 12 to 18 months, if you're selling, I would encourage you to reach out to these two gentlemen because that evaluation will wake you up. And it'll wake you up into the things that you need to do to be prepared for that actual sell. And that's my encouragement. I think guys like this are worth their weight in gold. I mean, their fees are really minimal in comparison to the fact that if you don't utilize someone, you don't get prepped into selling that, you're not going to get really good value out of your business. So, you pay what you get. I guess you get what you pay for. So I want to, Oliver, thank you. Sean, great to see
Appreciate
you
it.
here and meet you. These are two great guys. They are born and raised in the hospitality business. Oliver, I know his family has been operating restaurants. Oliver was, I'm sure, standing on a crate washing dishes just like me when I was a kid. So, but I wanted to thank you both. Lisa, thank you very much for leading this and organizing this for our members. And Lisa, will they have the ability, our members, to reach out to Sean or Oliver afterwards? I'll let you take it.
Absolutely. I will include their email addresses in the follow-up email that's going out this afternoon. So if you guys have any questions that we didn't get to today, feel free to ask them of those.
Thank you all.
All right.
Everyone, have a nice
Thank
holiday.
you. Thank you for hosting and having us once again. Happy
You
upcoming
too.
holidays and New Year.
Yeah.
Let's look
Thanks,
forward to
everyone,
an
for
exciting
joining.
2025, right? Thanks, Ken. Thanks,
All
Lisa.
right.
Thanks,
Thank
all.
you.
Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
And thank you all. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.